stealing in as relapse sums above the din. It's hard to know if this will be the day.
Hello and welcome to episode 78 and a half of the Thinking Poker Podcast. In Somerville, Massachusetts, I'm Nate Mavis, and with me from Montreal is Andrew Brokus. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Good evening, Nathan. Good evening, listeners.
Yeah, it's I know financially how the Scoop's treating you, but psychologically, how's the Scoop treating you so far?
Pretty well. I mean, mostly I'm just excited to be playing. It hasn't been ruinous. I mean, I've played three of the high buy-in events so far and cashed in one of them, so that's not really a bad record. I mean, naturally the one that I cashed was a 1k and the two that I whiffed were 2k's, but nonetheless, you know, it's not bad, and I enjoy, you know, Montreal is getting to be like a poker routine for me now. I've played the W Coupe from here twice, and now I'm here for the Scoop. It's starting to feel like a more familiar place to me, which is nice.
That's excellent. And of course, you're there to play tournaments, and every tournament player knows that you could play 52Ks without cashing, and that would be a thing that could happen. So,
yeah, I mean, ask me again in a week if I've, you know, I might be in a slightly worse mood. But yeah, at the moment, I'm happy to be playing. I don't feel like things have been going terribly. I don't feel like I've been playing terribly. So that's all it takes for me, you know. I forgive myself small mistakes as long as I don't feel like I'm just playing like a complete moron, which I don't.
So. And I've been happy to have an excuse to open up PokerStars. So I've been sweating you a lot, and it looks like you're playing very reasonably. So in case that means anything, I, who can't see your cards and am usually doing something else as I'm watching the games, it looks like you're playing pretty well. So you got that.
Thank you, sir.
All right, let's do it. We got big news.
Yes, very big news. So we are going to, the Thinking Poker Podcast is going to become part of the Poker News podcasting family, which means that pretty soon there is going to be a new place for you to find us. As of the time that you are, actually it's starting with the episode after this week, that's why this is episode 78 and a half. We're just going to kind of do a quick, may not turn out to be so quick, update, talk a little bit about some Scoop stuff that's going on, and mostly we wanted to give you all a heads up that starting next week with episode 79, the Thinking Poker Podcast is going to be available through the Poker News podcast feed, which you can find on Poker News or you can find on iTunes. This is something we're pretty excited about. It's going to mean a lot more exposure for us, hopefully a pretty huge increase in our listenership, which is obviously very important to us. It's going to mean a little bit more money in our pockets, which is of less but still not trivial importance to us. And pretty soon you will not be able to get the podcast any longer from the Thinking Poker podcast feed, which if you're currently subscribed, we're going to leave it set up for a couple weeks when we're on the Poker News feed as well, but eventually we will be available exclusively through Poker News. So we'll make sure we give you clear instructions on how to switch over, but it's signing up for the Poker News podcast feed through iTunes or through the Poker News website is something that you can do now, and then you know, you'll be getting our show as soon as we officially become part of them, starting with next week's episode 79. And we will leave this feed active for a couple of weeks and continue to remind you to do this, but pretty soon you will no longer be able to access your favorite Thinking Poker content in the way to which you have been accustomed. We do apologize for that inconvenience, but we hope that you will share our excitement in getting to reach a much larger audience.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. Not only just because we're reaching more people, even though that's nice, you know, we like the show and we like the thought of it reaching more people, but also because this might open up opportunities for us to, you know, to get guests and possibly to record special content from the World Series of Poker that we wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And, you know, hopefully just take the podcast to the next level. I think my goal is to keep everything that's good about the podcast now and hopefully add other good things to it also. And I'm optimistic about that. And hopefully from, you know, the listeners' perspective, it should be it should be good. It should be the same show, hopefully a better show, still free, a couple extra advertisements. Yes, probably.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
That's how we get paid.
Yeah, that's right. So, so it should be like that. You'll be able to get it from, Andrew's blog the way you get it now, or from the current feed for a little while. Then you'll have to switch feeds, but, hopefully it's going to be a bigger and better thing. And you can think of this episode as, you know, one last cup of tea with just the two of us and just the original classic Thinking Poker audience.
I should say I'm not having the traditional Thinking Poker cup of tea because this has been a somewhat disappointing poker day for me. I made day two of one of the 1K Super Tuesday replacement event, but didn't end up doing terribly well on day two of that, and also whiffed pretty quickly in all of the Super Knockout events. So I'm actually having a Quebecy beer at the moment, and not the traditional Thinking Poker tea.
Ah, very good. I'm actually having a cup of ice water today because the heating in my building is all messed up and it's way too hot in here. So I can't really do hot beverages indoors these days.
So hopefully my hand analysis won't suffer too much from my slight inebriation.
Yeah, it's too bad. I finished up my work at 5 p.m. today. Then at 5 p.m., I started sweating you in the 1K scoop. And I thought I would see if you made it through the blinds and button without busting. And then if you did, I thought I might be able to make it through the half-hour walk home and dinner, and then still have some more Andrew to sweat after dinner. But that was not to happen.
I mean, I think I got it in a pretty straightforward spot. I had like 18 big blinds or so. I was in the big blind. I had ace-jack suited. Someone raised from middle position, just a min raise. Somebody called, and I think it's a pretty clear ship it with the ace-jack suited.
Yeah.
Got called by ace-queen suited, and it was a pretty decent flop for me in the sense that there was a pair on the board, so all I needed was one more pair to run out, and I'd get a chop, but it was not to be.
All right. Well, if you have five or six more of those beers, you'll probably say some really interesting things by the end of this show. So let's talk about some hands.
Okay, so there was one that I know you saw. I think that the interesting hands mostly come from the very first high event that I played, which was a 2K 6-max. Not surprisingly, you're going to get more interesting content coming out of a 6-max tournament. You have more cause to play marginal hands, which is usually what produces the most interesting stuff. So there was one that you commented on that you saw, and I know you don't know the results of it yet, and I want to come back to why you found that hand interesting. But the first thing that I want to talk about is a hand that kind of set this one up a little bit. So this occurred at the 5100 level. We were actually playing five-handed at the moment. And I was in the big blind with 8,700 chips, which means I had 87 big blinds. The cutoff opened for a min raise to 200, and this player had like 26,000 chips. So he's got me covered by a wide margin. He opens for a raise to 200, and I'm in the big blind with ace-5 offsuit. I think, you know, as much as I'm not thrilled about playing an offsuit ace out of position against a pretty good player, relatively deep stacked, I think that facing a cutoff raise, getting like 4.5 to 1, it's not really optional to call this.
Yeah, no folding. I mean, three betting is an option under certain circumstances, but no folding.
Yeah, I'm a lot more inclined to three bet a suited ace. I think like an ace five offsuit, you know, I don't think he's going to fold that often to the three bet. And you know, ace five offsuit is a hand where I'm really not going to be. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to be looking to play a lot of 86 big blind pots with ace five offsuit. So I think that playing smaller pots is preferable versus ace five suited. When I have the opportunity to make the nuts, or it's much easier to make the nuts with ace five suited, I'm a little more inclined to build a big pot. And you know, at least having a flush draw will give me some good semi bluffing opportunities in a three bet pot.
Yeah, I agree. If this player were somewhat more 4-bet or foldy, then having a bad ace, that can be a good blocker hand to raise, and you'll rarely have to play it out of position. So that's like the tendency I would look for when I was thinking about whether to 3-bet it or not. But as a standard play, I'm certainly calling.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we go to the flop, and it is Jack 8-3 with two hearts. There is 500 in the pot. And I have the ace of hearts. So I have a backdoor nut flush draw. I have ace high. And the flop is jack 8-3. I check, and my opponent bets 230. I think that, I think that folding, calling, and raising are all options. I think, you know, ace high is still, there's actually still a decent chance that ace high is good. The backdoor nut flush draw is the only reason that I'm considering something other than folding. I think if I had ace five of diamonds, I would consider this a pretty clear fold. But I think that the backdoor flush draw is nice because it gives me a good hand to bluff on heart turns. So you know, if a heart turns, basically, then I'm going to have a very good semi-bluffing hand. And then add to that the possibility that ace high is still best. That's the reason why I'm considering something other than folding.
That makes a lot of sense to me. The short answer is that I completely agree with everything you said. My instinct is to fold because ace five offsuit is not much better than a random hand before the flop. And after a coordinated board comes down that you don't have any pairs on, you're certainly behind a random hand. So that's a problem. Also, you're out of position. Unless this player is terrible, you probably have a playing disadvantage. So that's my argument for folding. But then when you add in the fact that you have a backdoor flush draw and a backdoor wheel draw, and the backdoor wheel draw doesn't mean much because it's ace 3-5 right now. But still, then especially given that sometimes you'll be able to show down ace high and win with it, then doing something else makes sense. If he's inclined to fold to raises on the flop, or if he thinks that you're a little bit tighter than you actually are about calling out of the big blind, like this is a board that you might think hits a big blind caller pretty well, because you see the medium cards, you see the suitedness, and you think, oh, he called out of the big blind. Maybe he has jack nine suited or something. I mean, if you're not really thinking about the fact that you could have like King Deuce offsuit or something here, or maybe not. I mean, would you call it
King Deuce suited?
Yeah,
King Deuce suited. I don't think I would have called offsuit, but suited I would call.
Okay, yeah, I would call King Deuce suited. I would call, I think, King Five offsuit. Anyway, so if he's the sort of player who's doing sort of weakish 2006 hand reading, then then you start to be able to represent things if you raise and calling. Calling is fine. You've got some equity. You have ace high. You don't have as much as 50% equity, but that's the argument for calling if you're going to play well.
And you don't need 50% equity when you're getting 3-1.
Yeah. Exactly. Immediate. But then you have reverse implied odds, and you don't know exactly what his opening range is, etc. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had to make a choice for myself, I might fold, but I think it's very close.
So I did elect to call here. And we go to the turn. Now there's 960 in the pot. I'm still holding ace five with the ace of hearts, and the turn is the three of diamonds, making the board jack 8-3-3 with two hearts. I check, and my opponent checks behind. I think that augurs well for my winning the pot, whether it means winning at showdown or whether it means bluffing the river. I think that, I just think he's betting a lot of his best hands on the next turn, on the turn.
That's true. I think some of the hands he's checking in order to call a bet with them. So better ace highs, especially, if he has a hand like ace 10, I think he could easily be showdown bound and not see much reason to bet the turn. So there's that. But I do think that getting the check behind on the turn is good news. I think that's good news. I think you're right about that.
So that may lead you not to like my river play. The river brings the deuce of spades. So the final board is jack 8-3-3 deuce. The third heart did not materialize. And I still have just ace high. I decided to bet a little under half pot. I bet 444 into a pot of 960, thinking that I could get him to fold better ace high or you know, perhaps a pocket pair smaller than an eight.
Okay. Can I give a really good argument for that? Like, now that I think about it more, I think I like the play more. Can I tell you why?
Please.
Because a lot of your better ace highs are going to three bet pre-flop. Because you would not have check raised a lot of jacks and eights on the flop because it's a coordinated board and you're out of position deep against an aggressive player. It would often have made more sense to just call, especially since your very best one pair hands are hands that you also would have three bet before the flop. So all of a sudden we're looking at a situation where, you're going to have a lot of one pair hands in your range and he's got a lot of air in his range. And so it makes sense to value bet a lot of that along with an appropriate number of bluffs, and ace five offsuit should be near the bottom of your range.
That was a big part of my thinking. I mean, I'm not, there aren't a lot of weak hands I'm check calling on the flop. If I have like 10, nine or two hearts, I'm more likely to check raise. Not that I always will check raise those hands, but I think a lot of my draws, I'm going to be check raising rather than check calling. So I actually thought of this as being pretty close to the bottom of my check calling range, which I think makes it a good bluffing candidate.
Yeah, I like that. What are you doing with queen 10 of diamonds on the flop?
I think that probably check raising, thinking that I can you know, represent hearts also if he calls. I think he's going to put me on hearts a lot when I check raise. So I think that check raising non-heart draws and then, you know, barreling heart turns will be a pretty good strategy with those hands.
Okay, that's good. Against a great opponent, I don't like that strategy because it's hard to raise a lot of value hands for all the reasons, a lot of made hands for the reasons I said. So, So if this guy is like truly excellent and can get a sense of your tendencies, then that's going to be very exploitable. Even if you can represent every draw, which I mean you can't simultaneously, but even if you could, you're going to have such a made hand weak range that it's going to be very hard for you to play. But that said, I think this is something that Krantz talked about in his videos back in the day. Like you have to adding more no pair to your range on a flop where you don't have a lot of made hands in your raising range already, that can be a dicey proposition. I mean, it's different if you can represent all the great draws. It's different. I mean, there are some caveats there, but in general, how about this? Now that I've said that, I really like the decision not to check raise ace five with the ace of hearts because your check raising range is already pretty heavy, or pretty draw heavy. So given all that, now I start to like this bluff a lot because if I'm in his spot with ace 10, now I really want to fold or even like pocket fives.
Yeah, I don't think this is like a trivial call for him holding ace 10 or pocket fives. I think it would be if I bet really small, you know, if I bet like a quarter of the pot, I think he's going to call with all those hands. But you know, I don't know that he's going to be good 25% of the time or so when he has, 75% of the time. When he has like pocket sevens, I mean, he might be, but I also think a lot of people probably don't call quite as much here as they should, getting really good odds. I mean, not everyone expects you to sort of float out of position and then bet small on the river as a bluff. Like that's, I think it's not a real commonly seen line. So although in theory, he maybe ought to call, certainly with the pairs anyway, he probably ought to call the river. I think that some people just do a sort of soul read fold with those hands thinking that, you know, they're not going to win 25% of the time.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, I like your play. You play great. what happens next?
So I bet 444 into a pot of 960 and he raises to 1650.
Huh.
I mean, it's a kind of weird line from him, but I didn't really give much consideration to trying to snap him off with ASI.
Especially with ASI. Yeah, you got to fold. And also, like as we talked about, your range is not made hand heavy there, and although you are going to be bluffing a lot, he's going to have a lot of hands that can just call against. Against that bet to pick off the bluff. I mean, if he had like 9-7 or a hand like that, then a raise starts to look tempting. I think a three bet is better than a call here, but really he should have better made hands and he should be able to value raise thinly is my point. You're not going to have a lot of really good jacks in your range or even, well, I guess you'll have threes. boy, now I'm starting to think about this. Like, why did he raise? Why did he raise? Like, your range there has a lot of threes, a lot of eights. I mean, some jacks and an air in it and a lot of withdraws. So why is he raising? Why is he raising? Well, probably because he has a jack and he can beat that range. But then why didn't he bet the turn? Maybe so that he could raise the river? Ugh. Boy, I thought it was a trivial fold. And I guess it is a fold. Like, what are you going to do, three bet? That's not getting a good price, and it's not very credible, although you can represent a three. Okay, I'm talking myself into a state of confusion, but now I'm a little bit more skeptical than I was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I am skeptical. I will say that I think against non-elite opponents, they have it here a lot more than they like theoretically should. I just think that this is a sort of line. Like, I'm kind of okay with having an exploitably wide folding range to this line, especially when it's like ace high is the hand that I'm considering snapping him off with. I mean, there is an outside chance that he's turning a better hand than ace five into a bluff.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And also, as you've written about, as I've written about in the past, what do you do when you might be losing, but you're still losing too often to continue? You fold anyway, and you fold the best hand sometimes. Like, that's how it goes. Like, sometimes you get bluffed. That's just life.
Yeah, so I didn't really think too seriously about calling that raise, but I certainly did keep in the back of my mind that this had occurred. And then the hand you're about to see, the results here of what I had.
Okay, so by the way, Andrew's pulling up these hands, and this is a fun episode of the podcast. It's an impromptu episode. I've never seen this hand before. It's very exciting. I'd never seen that one. It was,
well, this hand you did see, but you did not see, you didn't know what my cards were, but you saw me play it and you were interested to know what I had.
That's right. The last one I'd never seen before. I didn't know which ones exactly we'd be talking about. It's exciting when these tournaments happen. We record when you get the chance. It's much truer to an actual Andrew Nate phone conversation than the average podcast. How about that?
So through absolutely no luck and just tremendous skill on my part, I have now run my stack up to 26,000 chips.
Well done, sir.
And the blinds now are 75-150 with an ante of 20. And I have 7 deuce of clubs in the big blind. The same player from the previous hand, he now has 22,500 chips, so I cover him by a bit, but we are both quite deep. I guess 150 or so big blinds deep. He min raises to 300 from middle position. So we're six-handed now. He is in the hijack rather than the cutoff when I'm in the big blind. He min raises to 300, and I am getting 4.3-1 in the big blind with 7 deuce of clubs.
Call.
Yeah. I don't really fold suited hands when I'm getting odds this big, especially not to a late position raise, which in 6-max is the only kind of raise that there is. Against under-the-gun raisers, against people who I think have, you know, very strong ranges, there's more, like, the more heavy people's ranges are in pocket pairs that are just over cards to both of the cards in your hand, like, those are the hands that really smash you equity-wise. Against a range that's not terribly heavy in pocket pairs, which, you know, any 6-max range, opening range is not going to be, then it's pretty hard to make a mistake calling getting 4.3-1, despite the fact that I have a very bad hand and I'm out of position.
Yeah, agreed.
So I call with my 7 deuce suited. We go to the flop with 795 chips in the pot. And the flop is deuce 5-3 rainbow, not a club to be seen. So although 3 suits are on the board, the 1 suit I would have liked to see is not on the board. I do have bottom pair with a kind of bad kicker. But, you know, when ranges are wide, any pair is a pretty decent hand. Mm-hmm. So I check the flop, and this opponent bets 380, approximately half of the pot.
Yeah, I don't see anything to do here other than call. If you raise, you're going to get called by a range that's going to make life tough for you later. And I don't just mean that in the sense that it's going to be better than your hand. It's also going to contain hands with aces in them that have perceived overcards and actual overcards, of course, and also a wheel gut shot. So I see really no reason to raise here. besides all the usual reasons not to raise with bottom pair. And I also see no reason to fold, and you should call.
So I call with my bottom pair, and the turn is a delightful deuce of hearts. So there are now two hearts on the board and two twos on the board.
All
to
skill.
Go along with the two in my hand, yes. This is the sort of skill that has run me up to 27,000 chips. So I check the turn. I don't think that's too controversial.
Nah.
There's now 1555 in the pot, and my opponent checks behind. Is there anything you want to say about his check behind, how that would affect your read on his range?
It's tough. Given that one of the cards paired on the turn, I think this is tricky. Honestly, I don't know exactly how this plays in 2Ks very well. Like, I don't know quite how the best players handle this. I do think he should be barreling for value wide. And so there's that. Like, I think his range looks pretty weak here. But I also think that I don't know quite what his bluffing range will be. Like, if he had 6-7, so he had a gut shot on the flop, and he would certainly bet that, I think. And then if it goes 5-3, deuce-deuce, that's a hand I would be inclined to bet with again on the turn, because you here should have maybe even peeled with king high sometimes. I think it's not so hard to get you to fold some... I guess all your aces, a lot of your aces either 3-bet or have a pair. But I would be tempted
to... That's not cool. I have every ace. Like, I have ace 8, ace 7, ace 9. I mean, those are hands I'm not 3-betting that I would probably call with on the flop. I would certainly call with on the flop.
That's right. Would you fold them on the turn?
I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, like, I'm kind of thinking from his perspective, he's going to have, I would say, broadly four types of hands. You know, he's got pairs, which he probably figures are ahead. Like, I'm going to have a lot of ace X in my range when I call this flop, and I'm also going to have a lot of fives and threes. So if he has like a five or better, I think he's going to presume that he has the best hand. So yeah. He's got pairs that he's going to think of as a value range. He's got ace X in his range. I do think he's going to bet the flop with a lot of his ace X. Yeah. So he's got ace X. He's got weaker draws than ace X, which would be either a six for a gut shot or a four for an open-ended straight draw, where he just has a draw of some sort and a not very good high card. And then he has complete air, which would be like, I guess he has hearts, which would also fall in that category of draws without a lot of showdown value. And then he has complete air, like 8-9 of clubs or something that just has no coordination with the board whatsoever. I would think that he's probably checking the hands that have no coordination with the board at all.
Yeah.
And I would think that he's probably checking the ace X, because he's not really going to get me to fold better than ace X. The ace X could still be good. He wants to see the next card, etc. So I'm going to think that his betting range is going to consist mostly of the pairs that are probably the best hands right now, and that you would like either to get value or to make me fold a hand like ace 8. Either way, he's kind of okay with it when he has something like 6-5. And I also think that it would make sense for him to bet at least some of his draws that don't have a lot of showdown value. His two hearts, his king four, the hands like that are probably not ahead of my range, but that have pretty good equity.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Good.
So when he checks behind, I'm thinking he has a lot of ace X and a lot of just complete air.
Yeah.
And the river now is a delightful seven of hearts, which gives me a full house.
Oh, you mean the best card of the deck for you?
and also puts three hearts on the board. I think that hearts are not really a factor in this hand. I have some heart-heart combinations in my flop calling range. As we saw in the previous example, I am willing to call the flop with a backdoor flush draw, or like knowing that I have a backdoor flush draw certainly factors into whether or not I call the flop with some hands. And I think that he's probably bearing a lot of his hearts on the turn. So I actually think that I'm a little bit more likely to have hearts than he is, although neither of us is particularly likely to have them. The backdoor flush draw is going to be a much less likely flush than a flush draw that was there on the flop. So I've got my full house. I think that my opponent probably has either ace X or nothing. And, you know, again, this is the same player who raised me when I made that, wasn't even that small of a bet, but I bet a little under half pot in that previous example. And he raised me, and I was kind of suspicious that it might be a bluff. So I decided this would be a good opportunity to make that small bet again. It's another spot where I could have a lot of no pair hands in my range. And I also think that he has a lot of no pair. So I think that, you know, even though I have a very strong hand, I don't see a case for making a really large bet because I don't think he has a lot of strong hands that can call a very large bet.
Good.
I think that...
that's exactly right.
Yeah, and I also think that if I check, you know, he is probably going to take his showdown value when he has a hand, like when he has an ace-x, I think he'll probably just check it behind and think either it's good or I'm not folding, right. which is true. So I don't really expect him to bluff with the ace-x. He'll probably bet if he has a seven. But, you know, I'm holding one of the sevens. He's not really very likely to have hit that. I don't think he's going to bluff that often when I check to him because, I mean, I could very plausibly call him with ace high. I think that he's betting, you know, if he has a pair that he could try to value bet against ace high, I think he's betting those on the turn. So I really think that his range on the river is pretty weak, and I don't think that he's going to call a large bet. I don't really see him bluffing either, though, when I check to him. So I think that a small bet, you know, can get looked up by his ace high. And I think that a small bet could also induce him to raise either as a bluff or maybe even to try to raise something like a seven for value. Certainly if he does have some unexpectedly strong hand, like he river to flush, I'm sure he would raise with that as well. So I think that a small bet is really the way to go here, even regardless of our history. But the fact that we played that other hand where he raised my small bet is icing on the cake.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I'd like to make a more general point, which is that in no-limit games, big hands are meant to win big pots with, but still, even given that general principle, you're only in the situations that you're in, and no bumper sticker slogan can replace actual hand reading. And I think this is a case where you just have to bet small to get value against a pretty crappy value target. Like it's, and I think that that's how it's got to be. Also, I think that getting bluffed is the best way to get more money into the pot. So I think maybe betting small also gives you the best chance of winning at least a medium-sized pot. But even putting that aside, even if you knew you were never getting bluff raised, I think betting small and taking your small value is the right thing to do, even though you might feel like you somehow owe it to the full house you hold to go for more.
Yeah, I mean, you're right that the bumper slogan of big hand, big pot, I think the thing that's missing from that is it really takes two big hands to play a big pot, right. Or someone who's willing to run a big bluff with nothing. Unfortunately, you're just having a big hand by itself is not enough to enable you to win a large pot.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's a mistake that I think more often gets made the other way where people aren't thinking big enough. I mean, it's why when we're playing extremely deep, we three bet with 10-9 suited before the flop against when we think the pot's going to be heads up anyway. It's because when we make the straights and flushes, we want big pots. It's why we raise the flop with top set, even though that's going to get folds pretty often because we have the deck crippled. Well, it's because when we do run into that good hand, we want to play a really big pot with it. That's all good. And often you see people leaving a lot of money on the table. But this is a case where the big hand is just has to play a small pot.
And also, I think that if he does happen to have a big hand, he's going to do the raising for me. I mean, that's a huge difference. Like, there's some situations where your opponent isn't going to raise with your value target, in which case you need to do the betting yourself. I mean, that can be true because, you know, the hand that you're targeting is not strong in an absolute sense or not strong enough to raise. Or it could just be that you have a very passive opponent. And both of those things are reasons why you might choose to bet large yourself. But in this case, I thought if he had a hand that was towards the top of his range, like a flush, he would raise it for me anyway. So it's not like I have to bet big in order to win a big pot from a flush.
Good.
So I bet about a third of the pot. I bet 5-5-5 into a pot of 15-55. And he obliges and raises me to 2,100. So now I guess there's two interesting questions. I mean, one is, should I put in the third raise? I mean, I don't have the nuts. I have actually one of the smallest possible full houses. And two is, if I do put in the raise, should it be a small raise or a large raise?
Good. So I was sweating this hand, right? And I couldn't see your cards. And I thought that this was a good three betting spot for you, both for value and as a bluff. I thought that his range was very much capped. I thought that although he's going to get tricky and check behind the turn with the full house occasionally, maybe it really doesn't make a lot of sense, and he can really get value from you with a full house, even if he has one. Like, the reason that checking behind, the reason that we're value targeting small is because he really ought to be betting his good hands on the turn, right?
Right.
So given that, and also given that you would check very strong hands on the turn because you did, all of a sudden we have a situation where even it's not even that easy for him to have a flush. I think he would barrel with those pretty often, with the flush draw pretty often. So now you have so many more full houses than he does. You probably have more flushes than he does. It's if you somehow had pure air here, I think it's at least worth considering a bluff 3-bet. For a lot of similar reasons, I think that you do have a 3-bet here, even with the smallest full house. If he did check behind a flush draw on the turn, which is not by any means a terrible play, I think he should raise it here. I think you could be betting a lot of sort of thinner value hands, for all the reasons we talked about on the turn and on the river and earlier on the street. So I think he can think that he has a value raise with plenty of hands worse than a full house. And I think you should be 3-betting him with all your full houses. That might be exploitably wide, but I don't really think it is. So that's why I think, I think 7-deuce is a 3-bet here on the river. And in theory, you should be balancing that with a certain number of bluffs. I, not having been able to see the cards, I found myself thinking that if he somehow had a hand like aces, I thought he was in a crappy spot just because he raised when his range was really much more capped than yours was, and you 3-bet him. That means that he's probably losing because you have a lot more good hands than he does, but not always, probably. So, I like your 3-bet. I don't have a really good sense of the sizing. I think you should give yourself a pretty good price on the bluffs and also give him a chance to call with worse hands. So I think all things considered, I'd make it smallish, like in the neighborhood of 5,000 maybe, or maybe like 5,300. I think that's a good 3-bet size, but I'm not great at that. What do you think of all that?
So I'm kind of thinking in terms of what I'm looking to get called by. I don't think there's really much question of inducing a 4-bet bluff from him. In fact, I would kind of puke if he did shove here.
I was going to say.
That would be a pretty gross spot. So I'm not really thinking at this point in terms of inducing further bluffing from him. So I want to think about what are the hands I'm looking to get called by. And I would say, you know, now these really fall into two categories. One are hands that are where there's some chance that I'm actually raising worse for value, which might be specifically the nut flush draw, or sorry, the nut flush, which is actually the flush I think he's most likely to check behind on the turn. I think that if he has something like 9-8 of hearts, he would want to bet the turn with that because it's a pretty good draw, but it doesn't have much in the way of showdown value, so he'd be pretty happy just to win it immediately. If he has a hand like ace-8 of hearts, on the one hand, it's a huge draw. He's got a gut shot, you know, possibly 2 overcards, 2 hearts. On the other hand, he's really not going to make me fold many, if any, hands better than ace-8. So I think it's actually plausible that he would check behind ace-8 of hearts before he would check behind 9-8 of hearts. So if he does have a heart draw, I think he's most likely to have nut hearts, and that's a hand that I think is going to have a pretty hard time folding to a river 3-bet because, you know, he can talk himself into, like, maybe I'm overvaluing a lower flush or something. Maybe it wouldn't even be overvaluing. I don't know. I think it would be, though. So I think that, you know, the really ideal thing would be if he has the nut flush, and then he might not even think of that as a pure bluff catcher. And then the other hands that might call me would be bluff catchers, just if he does have pocket aces or he has a 7 or something, and he just doesn't believe me, or he feels like he has to call with some percentage of his range, and those hands are close to the top of his range given what he would bet on the turn. So those are the two hands I could look to get called by. I think that against those bluff catching hands, it's a little closer in terms of how to size it. You know, as I'm kind of choosing here between making it, you know, 5,000-ish, which would be like 2.5 times his raise, or 6,000 or a little more than that, which would be like 3x his raise. It's not a huge difference between the two. I think that the bluff catcher hand could go either way. I mean, on the one hand, he's getting better odds. But again, some people do the like soul reading thing where they're like, I raise so small, they're like, oh, it couldn't possibly be a bluff. I'm not going to call with a bluff catcher. Whereas a larger raise might actually more plausibly represent a bluff to him. And then you also factor in he doesn't have to call quite as often to make the larger raise correct. And I also think that if he does have ace-x of hearts, he's going to be a little less price sensitive. So I decided to err on the larger side of the range that I would consider through betting for value, and I made it 66-66.
All right, that makes sense.
And he tanked for a long time and eventually folded.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, obviously I'd prefer a call, but it is, I mean, there is a sort of a dominance or alpha dog kind of thing that you establish when you like make people fold in situations where even if they think they probably made the right fold, there is definitely that, like, the fact that they didn't get to see our cards and they have to question whether or not they actually made a correct fold. I think there's something to that. I think it makes you harder to play against, not just in the sense that they don't get to see your card, so they don't know that I called with seven deuce suited, but I think it also just makes you harder to play against in the sense that, you know, he might start to think that I'm, like, in truth, I am probably not three betting this river as a bluff as much as I should be. So, you know, just in other situations, he might think that I'm more weighted towards bluffs than I am, or that I'm capable of bluffing in some spots that I might not. Just because when he doesn't see your cards, he has to factor in some chance that he got bluffed, and that's going to affect the way that he plays against you in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, from the third personal perspective, you looked very dominant indeed when this hand went down. So, nice job. All right. Do you want to do another hand? I kind of feel like this is a good show.
And yeah, I think we're good.
Sounds good.
I guess what I will remind people in terms of other hands is that you are likely to see a lot more hands from this tournament on Tournament Poker Edge in the future. And if you would like to see hands from, actually, I don't think I have any scoop stuff on there, but if you would like to see hands from WCoop's past, that I've played, and you know, signing up now will get you access to those WCoop hand history reviews from 2013, and when they are released, you'll get to see some 2014 scoop hands as well, including but not limited to the two that we just discussed here, and you will be able to find all of those at tournamentpokeredge.com.
All right. Have an excellent week, and I hope everybody's as ready as we are for the new and exciting times ahead.
Yeah, just you know, go sign up for that feed now. Search for Poker News on iTunes or in whatever your favorite your feed reader of choice is. Go to the Poker News website and find their podcast page. Make sure you subscribe to their feed. Pretty soon, that will be the only place to find the Thinking Poker podcast. Thanks for listening. Devotion of a Carmelite, or the fair passage of a bill, and who will sign us into law? I know you won't, you won't, you won't, you won't. Will you? You won't, you won't, you won't, you won't. Will you? You won't, you won't, you won't, you won't. You won't sign. I drafted up a beautiful contract.
Nope.
Use that shot.